Welcome back to the program. We'd all like the ability to see the future. Unfortunately, few of us have the appropriate psychic powers. What we can do, however, is invent the future, at least our own future. But we each have our own unique path, our own unique story that is evolving right here and right now, even as we listen to this. Unfortunately, too often we lose our place in that story. We're told, often as young people, to abandon it in favor of some standardized norm of education, business, and career. The fact is that conformity does not work. It's the enemy not only of creativity, but of an authentic life. Trying once again to find our place and our story is what my guest, best-selling author and internationally recognized thought leader Ken Robinson, is trying to teach us in his new book, Finding Your Element. In his groundbreaking and best-selling book, The Element, Robinson inspired us to find out what really makes us tick, and now in the sequel, he seeks to build upon his core ideas. It is my honor to welcome Sir Ken Robinson back to this program to talk about finding your element, how to discover your talents and passion and transform your life. Sir Ken Robinson, welcome back to the program.
It's my pleasure, Jeff. Thank you so much for inviting me back.
Great to have you back. You have been doing this work for a long time, and what's so remarkable when one looks at it is how much more relevant it is even today, given the nature of education and work and technology and everything that goes along with it in the 21st century, how much more important these ideas are today.
Well, I think so. I think they're becoming more important, not less, the further we go on. I think that's right. And particularly in relation to education, which sadly I think is becoming even more narrow these days very often because of this culture of standardization and testing. So, yeah, I think these, I mean, they're perennial issues. You know, there was a wonderful book by Joseph Campbell years ago, who studied the myths and legends of cultures around the world. It's called The Hero's Journey. Mm-hmm. And he traced the pattern of the journey through life as described in different stories and cultures over thousands of years. Part of my argument is that we all still have to make that journey for ourselves. It's the perennial journey of a human being to find your course, to find your path. And it's always been important, but I think it's especially important now that people look back at these core principles because of the way our cultures are shaping up.
There's also this greater unity between what we learn and how we're educated and the importance of those skills and those abilities as they relate to any business and the ability to have a career, whether it is in the business world or the world of culture and the arts.
Well, that's right. You know, one of the impulses behind the two element books, the first one and now the new one that's out this week, Finding Your Element, is that there are broad differences in the way people see their lives. I mean, I meet people all the time who don't enjoy what they do very much. They just get through the week and wait for the weekend. But I also meet people, I'm sure it's true of you, Jeff, in the work you do, who absolutely love what they do. You know, they can't wait to get to it in the morning. It's the thing that drives them. And they, you know, if you said to them, why don't you do something else for a while, they'd say, well, I don't know what you mean. This isn't what I do, it's who I am. And as you said in the introduction, that they have this sense of authenticity, that they're doing what they were meant to do. That's what I mean about being in your element. It's doing something where you feel that you're most natural and most authentic. And the first book was an explanation of what that means, really, and why it is that way for some people. And this new book is to say, well, if you feel you're not in your element or you know people who aren't, what practically can you do to get there? And it has a lot to do with sometimes the work people do, and that's increasingly important in the way the world's changing. But it's not only what you do for a living, it's what you do to make a life, and it's the balance between those two things.
And it all begins, as you talk about it, not with creativity, but with imagination, the ability to see where you would like your life to go. It may not follow every step along the way, but at least to imagine what it might be like.
Well, that's right. I think it's very hard to predict your own life. I often ask people these days when I give do public events, to, you know, people in their midlife and older, to put their hand up if they knew exactly when they were at school what they'd be doing now. Hardly anybody ever puts their hand up, because you can't. And it's something I always want to say to young people at school. You know, if you don't know what the rest of your life's going to look like, don't worry about that just yet. You need to know what your next steps might be and to focus on those. But life's journey involves all kinds of odd turns and twists, and people end up doing things they didn't expect, and their passions and interests tend to evolve. So it is a journey that's often very idiosyncratic. But it doesn't mean that you can't at least set off with a sense of direction. But one of the reasons it changes so much is, just as you say, that we are, as human beings, we have this tremendous power of imagination. It's something we take for granted. But there's no evidence that other species on the planet have it in anything like the same degree. I mean, the ability to imagine is to bring to mind things that aren't present. And with imagination, you can visit the past, you can visit other people's point of view, you can empathize with them, and you can anticipate the future. What comes from that are all the practical powers of creativity, the ability to make new things, to think new ideas, and to find new solutions. And that process of being creative is really how our own lives are driven forward. You know, we do literally create our lives. It's why everybody's resume is different, because we are unique and we create different lives for ourselves.
And creativity really rests on that ability to imagine in many respects, the ability to carry out those things that will make that imagination possible.
Yes, I think of creativity as applied imagination. You know, you could be imaginative all day long and never do anything. But to be creative, you actually have to do something. It's a very practical process, and it can be anything. You could be creative in running a business, in mathematics, in creating music, in running a radio program, and in anything at all that involves human intelligence. You can see new opportunities and you can pursue them and put them into practice. And I've written a lot about this in some of the books, about the importance of creativity. It's one of my big concerns that our school systems at the moment tend to discourage creativity. They tend to suppress it through this process of standardization. But it is vital to the pulse of our own lives, you know, that you don't get your resume with your birth certificate. You create your life and you can recreate it. And you create the best life for yourself if you understand more about your own natural talents and the things that excite you and raise your energy.
And as you talk about, the third leg of that stool is the innovation that really is putting those creative ideas into practice, the way in which we take those ideas and give them practical application.
That's right. And that's what the economy depends upon. I work a lot these days, as well as with education systems. I work a lot with businesses. And it was interesting, there was a study done a couple of years ago by IBM, where they interviewed the heads of 1,500 corporations around the world and asked them what their priorities are. And their top priority, they said, is creativity. How do you run organizations which constantly come up with new ideas and stay ahead of the curve? And, of course, it's very important. It's for businesses to do that. If they don't, they go under. I mean, look what's happened to Kodak recently. Kodak is now in receivership, and it's the company that invented home photography. I mean, the Brownie camera in the early 20th century was the iPod of its day, and it's now gone out of business. It was the central energy of Rochester, New York, as a city, and now it's gone. And it's gone because, not because people aren't taking photographs, but because they didn't keep pace with change. So innovation and creativity are connected, and they're vital to the economy. And it's why, from a jobs perspective, developing abilities of creativity is becoming more and more important. It's something we should certainly do in schools, but it's something I'm encouraging people to do in Finding Your Element too, is to discover the things in yourself that make your heart move faster and that excite your energies, and areas where you're much more likely, I think, to develop your own creative powers.
And one of the things you run headlong into, and you've talked about this in the books and in lectures that you've given, is this feeling that most people have that they're not creative. Kids find themselves creative, and at a certain point, all of that changes.
Well, yes. You know, the thing is, Jeff, about this, I think, is that creativity, it's not one thing. It's a set of skills and abilities. Sometimes people say you can't assess creativity, and I say, well, you can, but you have to look at what it is we're talking about. For example, are you talking about music, or are you talking about chemistry or physics, or are you talking about running a business or cooking? Creativity is the process of having new ideas, but you can't have new ideas if you're not doing something. So you have to look at what it is you're doing to judge whether or not what you're coming up with is original or it isn't. So it's often as well, it's not just about just freewheeling and coming up with any old idea that you can possibly think of. Creativity is a very practical process. I mean, if you're composing music, it involves also being able to control the instrument and that you're working with. So there are skills involved in all forms of creativity. So when people say they're not creative, firstly, I don't believe it. If you're a human being, it comes with a kit. But often what is true is that as people get older, they lose their confidence in the ability to come up with new ideas. And also, they haven't developed some of the techniques and skills that are needed to do real creative work. You know, it's like the difference between being able to speak and being able to write. Most people in ordinary circumstances learn to speak fairly easily. Not everybody learns to read and write. And it's not because they can't. It's just you have to learn how to do it. There are skills involved. It's the same with creative work in most fields. So my argument is that we all have these latent talents, and part of the aim of finding your element is to help people dig down and discover what these talents are and how to bring them up to the surface.
But another important part of that, as you outline it, is the ability to fail, the ability to be willing to experiment. Talk about that.
Well, yes. I mean, if you're trying to come up with new ideas, fresh thinking, then you inevitably make mistakes. There are wrong turns. And in any creative process, what you end up with may not be at all what you had in mind when you started out. I mean, to take one end of this, a friend of mine from the UK, I'm sure your listeners may not all know this, but I'm not, as you can hear, from America. but I live here now. I've lived here for 12 years. And I've had the opportunity to travel all across the country and meet lots of wonderful people and see fantastic projects. But one of the people I know from the UK won the Nobel Prize for Chemistry. I'm not a chemist. I was involved in another project with him. But he won the Nobel Prize for Chemistry. That's the world's top prize in his field. And I asked him how many of his experiments fail. And he said, you know, probably 90% of them. He said, but, you know, failure is not the right word for this. When you're doing original work, there are lots of false starts and dead ends. What you're finding out is what doesn't work. And it's wrong to call it a failure. These are steps on the way to succeeding. Thomas Edison said the same thing. He made thousands of attempts to invent the light bulb until he found one that worked. And if you're embarked in any creative process, whether it's in science or arts or cooking or running a business, you've got to be prepared to make mistakes. And if you don't make mistakes, then you don't learn. And that's been borne out time and again in every sort of field. The problem, I think, just to go back to education for a moment, is that kids these days are penalized for making mistakes and discouraged from doing it through this standardized testing. What stops people finding their element very often is a fear that they will fail. I have a whole section in the new book about that, about you have to be prepared to take a risk. People are often concerned if they do it, they'll look foolish, it won't work out, you know, they might decide. I mean, to take a random example, you know, somebody might have wanted their entire life to do a dance course, you know, to do tap dancing or something, and they think, well, I'm in my 40s now, everybody's going to laugh at me if I do it. Or, you know, they may want to decide to take a course in carpentry or to retrain for another job, and what will hold them back is a fear that other people will think they're ridiculous and it won't work. And my experience is, if you're not prepared to take a risk, then it's very difficult to move forward, and it's your life, and you should be prepared to at least try it. And if you're prepared to try it, then you may find you have a remarkable result.
Circling back to education again, one of the goals of education, in order to effectuate the kind of things you're talking about, has to be this willingness for lifelong learning, that learning as a child is not an end in itself, but merely the preparation for learning the rest of your life.
That's right. That's exactly right. I mean, we are, as human beings, we are, you know, learning organisms. We learn all the time. I mean, the evidence now, by the way, it's very interesting, is that babies are learning not from the point at which they're born, but before they're born. There's some very interesting research about the influences on babies as they're evolving in the womb, that they pick up the rhythms of speech that they can hear as they become aware of them. And some very interesting cultural differences there. But certainly, the minute children are born, they are ferocious learners. They learn very quickly and huge amounts. I mean, they learn to speak. We don't teach them to speak. They just learn to speak. We help them, but we couldn't possibly teach them to do it. And it was once thought, you know, that the brain starts to deteriorate quite early on, that we lose brain cells. Actually, the evidence these days is that we continue to produce them, that the brain is very malleable and continues to grow. It's like any muscle. If we exercise it, it will grow, and if we don't exercise it, it will start to atrophy. So as long as people are vibrant and alive and curious and willing to move forward, there's absolutely every opportunity to learn right the way through life's journey. I know people, I'm sure you do, in their 90s who are an example to all of us of you know, an appetite for learning and for new experiences. So no, this the book, I hope, will have a lot to say to young people, but it's not only for young people. If you're alive and willing, then at any age, I think there's still an opportunity to find your element.
And finally, talk a little bit about the nexus between finding your element and mastery and the importance of that and bringing the two together.
Well, it's interesting. One of the, in the first book, one of the people I interviewed for the book was Paul McCartney of the Beatles. And it's a very interesting example to me of the relationship of skill to passion. When he and John Lennon first met, he said they only really knew two chords, and you know they were working on that. But then they, this in the late 50s, but then they were told there was some other guy in Liverpool who knew a third chord. So they got on the bus one Saturday and went to this guy's house, and he taught them the third chord. And he said, of course, that expanded all our horizons enormously. So they went back and kind of got on with forming the Beatles at this point. So, but when they started out, they, you know, they only knew a little of how these chord structures worked and how the instruments worked. But of course, as they went on, they got more and more expert and more in control, and more as their ambitions grew. And to me, I just mentioned because it's a very interesting example to me about how discipline and mastery relates to creativity. You don't have to know everything before you start. You just have to know enough to get started. But if your passion is strong enough, if your interest and enthusiasm is good enough, then along the way you will acquire more skills and practice them and become more expert. And the more expert you become, the more you'll be able to do creatively. It's a very interesting kind of conversation between imagination and discipline. And that's really how creativity in most fields, I think, tends to evolve. So you shouldn't be put off by thinking, well, I don't know enough to get started. If you're interested enough, enthusiastic enough to get started, you'll learn what you need as you go on.
Sir Ken Robinson, the book is Finding Your Element, How to Discover Your Talents and Passions and Transform Your Life. Sir Ken, I thank you as always for joining us. I appreciate it.
That's a great pleasure, Jeff. Again, thank you for having me back.
Thank you. We'll take a break. I'll be right back.